This episode is brought to you by NutriChamps Supplements. Go to NutriChamps.com to receive 15% off the entire site with our discount code, which is Caffeine22. That's Caffeine22. I'm not going to spell it out for you. If you can't spell caffeine, you got bigger issues at hand. You're going to have a rough road ahead, okay? Caffeine22, 15% off. Everything you need to enhance your health. Check them out. Part of every purchase goes to helping women and children in need. Not the men for some reason, but women and children in need. This episode, 135, Corey G, a.k.a. Corey Gregory, a.k.a. Max Effort Muscle, formerly known as Muscle Farm Prez. Check him out. Rags to riches story. Grew up working in a coal mine. Flipped Muscle Farm when they were grossing $1 billion. This is a crazy story. And he's one of my favorite guests. So here it is, Corey G. Check it out. Welcome to Gas Station Cappuccino. Brought to you by Caffeine and Kilo.
It's been a long time since the cappuccino was fashionable.
We go to one of those cappuccino places.
Cappuccino.
Practice situational awareness next time you're at the gas station.
I didn't realize how much a verified check mark matters to these kids, right? Because I'm not even thinking about this shit. I've had that forever, right? And so I start commenting on my kids' shit, and their friends are like, yo, what? How's your dad verify? What's going on with this? Like, then I started telling them, like, listen, y'all should just give in, because one, with our company and all the young dudes at the office, our shit's cool. Two, like, it's relevant, and I'm on social media actively. So I'm in the now, no, for the most part. And I was like, y'all should just give in. It's just what it is. I think they kind of believed it. Now, my youngest is going to be the trick. He's a little bit of a tough guy. So he's like playing me off right now, but he's not on social media yet because he's only like 11. But like, I'm telling him, like, hey, like the other two just kind of gave in. So whether or not, you know.
But him, you might have to go like the Max McConaughey's dad, right? Like, have you, McConaughey's got this book, Green Lights. You should listen to the audio. Yeah. Actually, it's inspired. Anyway, talks about how their dad doesn't think they're a man until they fight him. So they like into high school, like they gotta like straight up like fist, like you gotta punch your dad in the face, otherwise like he doesn't respect you as a man yet, and that's like your rite of passage in his family was fist fighting the pops. So I think that young, as he starts getting a little older, he pushes back one time, you're like, you know what, you want to go, let's fucking do it, and just like let him swing, and then you're good, you know, just get it out of his system, and like maybe you're all right then.
I'll tell you, I have experienced though my oldest going to a meet. And that right there, like wrapping your kid's knees for like a fucking squat that's going to be on your board. Like we don't have a lot of 148s. He knew he could break that. That's why he wanted to do it. And like he goes and smokes 380, makes 402, but they called him on depth or whatever. And the guy even hit my leg. But either way, like I remember wrapping his knees and he was like, dad, after I make 402, I want to take the record, which I think in the state was like 430 or something. I was like, I know you can make 430, but I'm not about to jump you from 380 to 430. But just having that, like that mentality, the lights are on, the fucking, you know, it was like, oh man, it felt like, yeah, dude, it felt different. I grew up watching Griffey, bro. I'm like, yo, I need to get him back up there. I want to go Griffey senior, junior powerlifting, you know what I mean? Like
that's sick.
Everything's possible, bro.
I'm the same team.
Hey Dylan, you gonna introduce our guest?
Yeah, I will introduce our guest. Before I do it, I just want to say I love how you're telling your kid to give in, just being like, I'm cool as fuck, dude. Like you better get used to it. Like I had a shoe deal, arrogant, I had all this stuff.
Get on board.
I'm coming to you live from GSC. We have a special guest today, someone who's no stranger to hard work, someone who breathes nothing but fire, coal dust, and creatine, someone who is a trendsetter, not a trend follower. Ladies and gentlemen, coming from the Ohio State, it's the Corey G. Welcome to the show, brother.
Yeah, what's good? Appreciate that. That was a good little intro, man.
Are you gonna take
Dylan,
that?
Dylan's got the fire intros.
Tell Trey to make notes right there. All right, breathe nothing but fire, coal dust, and creatine. That's it.
Fire. I speak nothing but what do you say? I breathe nothing but fire, coal dust, and creatine. Cole, that's pretty good.
Dude, write that down. Right
there. Yeah, that's good. I'm gonna put that shit in my bio.
That should be the whole bio,
dude. I'm gonna tell you that. I'm always been a fiery kid because I hated my situation and I wanted to change it. I asked for creatine when I was for when I was 15 years old for fucking Christmas. And I have a homie that stole it from the mall, and I would buy it hot off of him because it was like $80 when you were kids. And fucking, out the trunk. And the coal dust, man, at the end of the day, like if I don't have that lesson of that 4 to 6 months, you know, that changed everything for me. Cause I knew in that moment, no one was going to have that story. And it was exactly what I needed to like help me grow up and get some money and work around actual men when I was a boy. And that right there, those three things is huge. So I like that intro. Thanks, Dylan.
Dude, I want to talk about that coal mine a little bit. One thing, Corey's got a few books and I've read them all. And one thing that stood out to me talking about in the coal mine, the height, like people think about working the coal mine, but they have no idea. They got no clue. I have no clue. When I say they, I'm part of them. I have no clue. Right. But it's not like you're just like whistling in like the seven dwarfs or whatever, going in there trying to get something done. Right. It's kind of a short roof in there. And like how far underground and how far did you have to go on this train? Like what were the circumstances like in there?
Yeah. So I can paint a picture for you guys. And I spoke at Ohio State to the baseball team like 6 months ago. And when I started to actually be able to articulate this, it was interesting because I had never done this in front of a group of kids before. I showed how tall the roof was. So like most of the time where I worked was between 38 and like 45 inches tall. So that's like literally like working under your kitchen table.
Yeah.
And most of that time I was shoveling the belt line, which is the flooring in my gym, by the way. So it's like, if you think about basically half the side of a road. So like if you're driving on the right side of the road, like that would be a piece of the belt line. And you would be on each side of that on your knees with your back rubbing the ceiling, shoveling the coal that is spilled off the belt line, the conveyor belt, back onto it. And they would drop you in one spot and say, see you in 12 hours or 16 hours, whatever it is. And you're essentially shoveling your way, you know, back to wherever so they can pick you up to go home. And you have another friend on the other side of the belt, but it's so loud, you can't even talk. So it's like, you're essentially on each side. Like, so one of your buddies would be on the yellow line. You'd be on the white line and you'd be shoveling your way down this path to what feels like for fucking ever. While there's water dripping on you and your back's rubbing the ceiling and you got like, knee pads on, kind of like you would if you're like doing tile or whatever. And you start to think of it to yourself. Like, I remember thinking like, is this really fucking worth it? And I remember it really didn't feel worth it till after 40 hours. Now I would work minimum 80 hours a week, but my biggest work week was 93 hours. I remember the paycheck, 93 hours, not in 2 weeks, in a fucking week. And I remember thinking, at $21 an hour, because it was time and a half, then it felt worth it. And so I would do my best to get to 40 as fast as fucking humanly possible, which sometimes was in like 3.5 days or something, or 3 days. I'd go 16, 16, 16, and like I'd be in that money quick. And I kind of learned how to work that system. And then it felt worth it. And I knew I just need to lift weights when I can, when I'm out, when it's light out, or be in the basement. And I need to work because I got something, you know, else planned for my life. So it was like a really focused time for me.
Would you say you still lifted weights doing that? So you're talking about 16 hours in the hole on your knees, shoveling coal, which by the way, shoveling coal back on the conveyor belt that fell off. You'd think there'd be like some sort of like a rail system or anyway, but that's a whole, right. whole other topic.
There was one. It was Corey.
Yeah. Corey was the rail.
Yeah.
Yeah, dude. Sometimes you're the hammer and sometimes you're the rail.
Well, and it was 600 feet underground and then sometimes up to 8 miles in. Once you go 600 feet down, they'd be like, hey, today's job site is on section 8. And section 8 would be a 45-minute ride underground to your job.
Yeah, dude. And so after it takes like an hour to get to the site probably sometimes, right?
Yeah, for sure.
And so then you're shoveling out. And then luckily it's only a 45-minute ride back because you did that shoveling. Nice work. And so then you're like, you know what I want to do now? Exercise.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when I had my one homie who ended up being a chiropractor, he was my center on my basketball team, Dr. Dorsey. If I would be out sometime when it'd be halfway light out, he'd be in the garage waiting on me to get there to, you know, train chest, back, whatever. We trained pretty much like bodybuilders back then. Or my stepdad, thankfully, was really into lifting weights. He was the one that got me the job in the coal mine. We have a really, really good gym in our basement. So I was able to lift weights then. But I really only train a couple days a week. My nutrition was awful. I ate fucking, you know, salami sandwiches with fucking little Debbie cakes. And I was a fucking train wreck. I was drinking, you know, fucking coffee all day. I used to even smoke some, you know, cigarettes before break sometime. I mean, I was a fucking mess because I was just like in that life.
You're a coal miner, dude.
I was a fucking, yeah. I mean, it's funny because when you're like me, I'm a fourth generation. So everybody I know does this. My uncles all do it. My dad did it for 16 years. My grandfather did it. My great grandfather, who's tattooed on my arm, died in the coal mine. His brother died in the coal. Like, you know, everybody did it. So to me, once I understood what it took, it felt, for lack of a better way, just kind of in my blood, man. Like, I didn't really think about it. I was there because I knew I was only going to be there for a short window. It was a means to an end. But there's definitely times I settled in, like, this is just bred in me. This is what we do in my family. It's really interesting because I could have easily, quote unquote, got trapped in there.
Yeah.
Not metaphorically trapped, but I could have stayed and it probably wouldn't have been that out of character for me because I'm a hardworking, grimy guy who enjoys that. This passion luckily just overwhelmed me and I couldn't deny that this is what I was supposed to be doing.
So what was the end? You said that was a means to the end. Like, what was the end? What was the goal? What were you doing? Like, dude, I got to get in here. I got to work 90 hours a week, try and make as much money as possible. Just putting coal back on this fucking thing. It was already on. Right. Like
ridiculous. Talk about mind numbing.
When you think about it like that, that's like, really, isn't that a ridiculous
thing? Let me waste my whole day in the shittiest circumstance that I could die in.
Yeah.
Putting that shit just back on.
Back on. And you know what? A mile down, there's going to be some other clown putting it back on after it fell off for me doing it. Right.
Dude, yes.
So what is that end goal? What do you have in mind where like, it's all right, I'm doing this because.
Yeah. Because, well, here's things I started telling myself when I was like 14, 15. I'm meant to do great things. This life ain't for me. This trailer ain't for me. This struggle ain't for me. Like, I just kept telling myself, like, I'm not okay with this. Like, something has to change. And it looks like I'm going to have to be the one that changes it. And it's funny is because this dialogue started happening to me, Danny, and I didn't even like, I don't know where the fuck it came from other than just the hurt, like the pain of watching my mom cry, not be able to pay her bills, my old man not really being around and no one liking their job. And just like all of this like unfortunate shit. And you're just like, there's gotta be fucking something different out here than this. And I think I started to get onto that dialogue. And then when the lifting and I started reading Arnold stuff, you gotta remember this is no internet. This is 96, 97, right? No internet, very low resources. Picture this. I don't know a personal trainer. I don't know one.
Right.
Yeah.
I've never met one. I don't know one that does it for their living. It's a fictitious job that people in California have. Richard Simmons.
Right. Right.
That's it. And so that's really my thought process at this time. But here's what I could conceptualize. I went to a gym that a guy owned that was hardcore, a couple of them. They all had other jobs. They worked in the mill or they were coal miners. So it wasn't their main job, but they still had a gym. And I could conceptualize, can I do this fictitious job called personal training? And can I own my own gym one day? And thankfully, my friends were moving to Columbus. I didn't pick it because the Arnold Classic was here or Westside Barbell was here, any of those things. I picked it because my friends were going to Ohio State. There's no fucking way I could get into it. But there was this little school that was a community college that had a one-year exercise specialist certificate program that then would deem me a personal trainer. And I thought to me, I could afford community college myself. I could be with my friends and it would give me a shot at maybe doing this job that I thought would be up my alley, which is helping people and teaching people how to lift weights. To me, if I could just get a chance at that, I already lived what my fallback plan was. Right. See, a lot of people say A, B, I already lived it and I was good at it and I could do it. I just didn't want to do it. So I think that's why when I came out here to do this, I was a little bit more like risk. I took more risk because I already know what the fallback is and I was okay with it. You know, if that's what I had to do to support my family, I could do it. I don't want to, but so, I mean, that was kind of like my concept of what I was trying to do. And I had a mild path to be able to do it.
It's one thing to have like your parents or a set of parents that kind of gas you up and tell you you can do anything you want, but to like do it yourself is like a whole different animal, I find. And I think that's it's tough to like, how do you like teach yourself that? Like you can say it over and over, but like until you actually believe it,
I think they out of it. I think they really believed in me too. Like they're always encouraging. But when I started reading how it really Arnold was so, you know, Arnold has done that for the entire industry, but I was super motivated by discipline in the gym, discipline in your profession, believe anything's possible. Like I read Education of a Bodybuilder and some of those other books early that actually had a lot of like motivational type shit in it. And I just started thinking like, and this question really came up a lot. And when I go in front of these groups and talk, I bring it up, the why not me? I literally kept saying like, why can't I do like, what is the internal blueprint that I was born with that was bred in this fucking trailer that's telling me that I am destined for that life? Like, I think I just battled that thought process, but it was only out of hardship, not out of somebody saying you can do this. It was just, I was fed up. Finally fed up enough that, and that's how most things change when you're just done. And that's the only way I can really, I think about it often. And as I went through this process with my new book, some of it was really hard to read back because it was so deep because I remember how hopeless it felt at times. But yeah, it's wild to think about, but I think that's where it came from. That was it.
One thing you said is, you know, you knew that was there. You knew there's like a fallback, right? Yeah. And that's interesting because everything I've kind of done, I've had a similar type thing, right? Like I knew whatever when I was teaching and like, we're starting anyway, all this different stuff. Like, oh, I'm going to quit teaching, go full-time into business and the caffeine kills and stuff. It's like, oh, well, I can always go back to teaching. Right? Like there's just like always these other things, these fallbacks. And what's interesting is sometimes you hear people say the opposite, right? They're like, hey, the only way to like really do anything is you got to burn the bridges, right? Burn the ships, right? Burn the ships on the shore and then you're all in and there's no way back. And that's the only way to do it. And I don't think that that's necessarily wrong, right? I think going all in is a good thing at times, but I think a lot of people are scared to take the leap, right? And the reason they're scared to take that leap is because they feel like, oh, well, if I got to do this, there's no turning back. And there's then it just, what it breeds is just inaction. People don't take any action because they're scared that if it doesn't work out, they can't do anything else. And it just makes them complacent, right? So I think sometimes like kind of, it's the story you tell yourself, right? It's like in workouts, I lie to myself all the damn time, right? It's like, well, I don't feel like doing it. Well, I'm not going to work that hard today. I'm just going to start. I'm just going to warm up and see how I feel. And then you start warming up and you feel pretty good, right? And you go, okay. Now, the whole time you know you're going to end up working out, but you're lying to yourself. You're just like, I'm just going to do this and then I can call it. I'm just going to do this and then I can call it. And just whatever it takes to move yourself along, you know? And so I don't know, what do you have any thoughts about that? Like, you know, the burning the ships on the shore or sometimes kind of, you know, telling yourself a story is better.
I think people believe that that's what I did, which is burn the ships, and kind of I did, but the other, if I never coal mined before and I took that leap and realized if it doesn't work, I'm going to the coal mine, probably would have been a different vibe for me. But I think cause I experienced it and I was like, shit, that ain't that scary to me anymore. Like, I don't want to do that. But like, to me, like I felt tough enough to say, fuck it, I could do it. And I think I could be good at it. I think I came up here with like a whole different vibe. And I'll tell you this,
more confidence, maybe, or more willing to go in harder.
Yep.
Yeah. Because I knew what the crash and burns, whatever.
I already know what I'm up against. And I wasn't that scared of it. And I think the other thing was, I had never seen that much money ever. Like I saved like 20 grand. My mom ain't never had 20 grand saved, bro. Like to me, I was already maybe better off essentially than my parents had ever been. Maybe at times, but for anything I could remember. So I'm looking at it like, all right, I'm 18, 19. I'm rolling to Columbus with 20 racks. I just bought me a little Acura Integra for 3 racks. I'm about to pay for school. My parents didn't have good credit, so they couldn't co-sign for my house. So I had to pay for my rent 1 year up front. I had everything locked up. So my confidence was not only like, I just fucking worked my ass off, like undoubtedly for that period of time, but motherfucker, I'm paying for everything. And in theory, maybe with no disrespect, already maybe jumped my parents in a way.
Right.
Not because my mom had got remarried. So she was already cool. Like she's in a better spot. But like I had no bills and I was only putting the money in the bank. So that's why I was able to essentially set myself up more, right? She was already better financially because of my stepdad. So it wasn't like she was struggling. I wasn't giving her no money because I didn't want to act like that. But I think like me starting off, I was like already better set up because of, you know, the work I had put in. So I'm coming up here thinking like, but I also didn't think I was going to own my first gym by the time I was 20. I was pushed into it. So like there's things that happen, but I never ran away from them. I then, when I was put in certain situations, I felt like I confidently said, I'm ready for this now. I'm ready for this, you know, because I believed in myself because I had already won. So that's what I think a lot of people maybe don't realize. By the time I'm 20, and I've got a small personal training studio and I had worked in this gym and they kind of pushed me into it and I'm started for $5,000. I already was successful. If it never goes past that, all of this other shit since 2000 basically is a plus. I was a coal miner wondering if I could do fitness as a job. That happened for me relatively quickly. Then it became, can I support like a family and do all that with it? But the reality is like, the first time that lady handed me $20 and said, I don't know even half of what you know. Can you teach me how to do fucking bicep curls? I was successful that day because it fucking worked. Mm-hmm. I then was making the same amount of fucking money I was in that coal mine to do personal training. So like anybody I would tell my friends anything, like they couldn't tell me shit anyway. I was going to go kill it. But like, to me, it felt like I'm already fucking winning. Like, people didn't even know if this is fucking possible. I didn't know one person that had this job. I just made $20 to teach a 60-year-old woman how to fucking do bicep curls. Like, I'm a fucking success.
Did you ever do 21s?
Oh, of course.
Yeah, that's the way to go. Hell yeah.
So I think that was my mindset. So my, like, the comparison shit that's going on nowadays, thinking you have to be rich by 25, all, like, none of that shit was in my head, man, because, like, it was already a win for me. And as I've progressed over the last 20 years, literally, all of this shit is like a plus, literally.
So now you're just teaching old ladies how to do bicep curls. And the one day you're like, you know what? This creatine shit's expensive. I should just sell it myself. Is that how it went down?
Kinda. So in 2000, so I go personal training. I've got like 5-6 trainers working at my studio. I had got, you know, bigger by then. I got like 35-40 clients coming 3-4 to 5 days a week. Like, I'm rocking personal training. I top out about 110, 120. Once again, winning from where I come from, right? Like, I got a old Benz. Like, I'm paying for my shit. Like, me and Rach is, you know, married. Everything's going good. I got AG and she's pregnant with Madeline. And we're talking like 2006, 2007, I start messing with protein. And I met Dr. Serrano in like 2001, who was my original formulator. So I started messing with protein, start figuring out, like, trying to understand manufacturing, trying to understand it. And I kind of hit a wall in 2006. Then fast forward, I'm at the Arnold in 2007, and I'm trying to get a deal to be the 180 fitness guy for some company. Like, I'm out there. That's when you go to Arnold Classic and everybody got a booth. I'm at, and somebody gives me a magazine I've never read before, heard of. It might've been a one issue. And I look in it and there's an ad for a company, never heard of, never taken before, but I put them on the fucking email list. It was called Hard Nutrition. It only lasted, I think, a year or two. But my old business partner, Brad Pyatt, was one of the owners. He's the one that fielded the email. He started sending me free shit. That was the original formula of Assault, which then turned into the pre-workout for Max Effort, which some changes. But that was like the original iteration of a lot of the products that I kind of worked with. And then all of a sudden, I quit getting product. Company went out of business, disappears. I don't hear from any of these people. 6 months, 8 months. All of a sudden, like late yeah, April of 2007, I get a message from Pyatt. Hey man, like, you know, some shit went down. I'm working on trying to do a new company. Here's the new formula. I get it in the mail in a fucking baggie. There's no label with it. There's looks like fucking cocaine. It's not even flavored. I take it though. And at the time, Gaspari Super Pump 250 was real popular.
Oh, I took
DSN,
that shit.
No Explode. Yeah. Real no popular.
Explode. Dude, NO Explode. Yeah. That, yeah. And Cell Mass. I was taking the NO Explode.
All that shit was combo. Popping.
Right? That Gaspari Super Pump. That's funny. I hadn't even thought of that, dude.
Right? Cell Mass. So I'm looking at all that stuff and I'm like, all right, but there's no athlete's company. There's no one doing it 1,3-dimethyl with what was the fuck I was telling people? Yep. Jack 3D was popular. So a lot of people were messing with the 1,3 or the all that shit. And I knew I didn't want to mess with that because I knew it was going to get banned and have all kinds of problems. It's like a basically a methamphetamine.
It's a short term. Yeah. Short term.
Short term money.
Yeah. Yep.
So anyway, so I take this baggie and I know it's better performance wise than everything that's out. I just, cause I've taken, I'm a supplement head at this time cause I've never taken drugs. So I've always tried different supplements. And so I tell my wife, I go, you know, this guy wants to start this company and I don't really even know him that well. And his other company went out of business, but I'm thinking this is a good idea.
Yeah.
Sounds fucking awesome. And so he calls me and he asks me what I think. And I'm like, yeah, it's good. You know, whatever. I go, what's the deal? You know? And he goes, well, I'd like for you to work for me, blah, blah, blah. And I said, look, bro. And here's one thing I left out. In 2006 or five, I started online training. I was way ahead of that game. I was consulting for some multi-level marketing companies. And I was the fitness trainer in a couple of these multi-level marketing companies that had heavy hitters making 100,000, 200,000 a month, like in that MLM world. Well, they started coming to me because I was speaking at the conferences to personal train them online. I was like, fuck it. So I set it up like a personal speed, like a business coach. I started personal training online 2005, 2006. I started making more money online than I was making in the gym. So when Brad calls me to work for him, I'm only working from 5 a.m. to noon, Monday through Thursday, in all night Wednesday online. So my lifestyle at this point is actually pretty fucking solid. And I'm like, bro, I ain't working for nobody. Like, you want me to be in this company, I'm going to own part of it. And then that's when he said, okay, tell me what you think you can bring to the table. And I was like, look, man, this other company's doing 100 million. I'm their main trainer. I'm teaching them the application of the product. I got workouts online. Like, I was way ahead of that shit. And he was like, all right, there's some value in that. And I was like, you know, obviously I can maybe raise some capital and this and that too. And that's literally how it started. So I tell my wife, I said, I'm pretty sure I just became business partners with a guy I've never met in person I don't know. It feels like an opportunity to roll the dice one time to be what my idol was, Bill Phillips, in this business who started EAS. And I was like, I want to have a chance to be my version of that guy. And he was from Denver, so he's familiar with Bill too. And yeah, we became business partners. We launched Muscle Farm in September of 2008. And some of those indicators that I've displayed and talked about were probably things I should have been more conscious of. And that was part of some of the problems I had towards the end. But the reality is, from 2008 to 2015, when I left, we sold about $500 million in fucking product worldwide. And, you know, it's interesting because you can sell $500 million, but if you spend $1.1 billion, it could still be in the red.
100%.
Right?
Yeah. So one thing you mentioned, you went and talked to your wife, talked to Ryan, said, hey, Here's the thing. I got this opportunity. Like, what was her reaction on that? Right. Cause that's something you hear these stories all the time, right? Like, or some stories of guys like, oh, so then I started this company, this opportunity, I did it. And a lot of times people leave that out. Like, oh yeah. Also, I'm married and have small children and I got to go explain to my pregnant wife that like this thing's going down. And that goes different ways, right? Like, sometimes you get a lot of pushback. Sometimes they're real supportive. Sometimes it's both. They push, you know, they push back a lot, but at the end of the day, they're there, right? Like, how's that conversation go? Did she think you were crazy? Was she saying like, hell yeah, Corey? Like, what's that like?
Catfished? Yeah.
No, this is great. This is great because I leave this part out a lot, and kudos to Rach because she's a beast. My wife always believed in me, but didn't always maybe understand it. But that's okay. She was there to support. So let me paint a picture. I get that opportunity that, by the way, if you write it out on paper, looks pretty fucking awful, I think, just to be straight. but I knew it for some reason. I got to tell you guys, like, I just knew it. And I went with my intuition. Rachel had already quit her job. She was a teacher like you, Danny. She had her master's in education. She's a kindergarten teacher. She quit her job because when AG popped out, Alex, my older son, who's going to be a senior in high school this year, which is wild. When he popped out, it was like, all right, she was driving in the country making, dude, I think her take home might've been like $800 every 2 weeks or something. I'm like, you're not here. And I'm going to pay $1,000 for someone else to raise my kid like every month in daycare. I'm like, let me just take a few more clients on and like, you just stay home and like, you learned how to like teach, like let's teach our kids. You know what I mean? Like I went old school. Like I would like for you to like help raise the family. She helped the books with the businesses and like, let's just do that whole thing. But when I get this opportunity, AG is, you know, 3 years old, I think, and she's pregnant with Madeline. So I look at her and I go, when I make this move, I'm going to have to give my clients away. And how, I'm not sure like when I can start paying myself. So she agreed to take out her 401, which I had to pay heavy taxes on. She only worked for like 3 years, but it was enough. My house payment was $1,300 at the time, as a small little log cabin. I paid for my rent or my mortgage for a year with her 401 after the taxes to give myself space of not that big bill. And I didn't have any car payments and stuff like that at the time, I don't think. So like I got that handled. I still had a few clients I worked with early in the morning. And then I was just straight all in building that brand. Kind of blindly and wildly from that moment on. And so she saw me go through some real ups and downs. And I tell stories here at the office a lot about some of the shit I went through, but yeah, I had some real good, like I had a question like, dude, you got a good life. You're making six figures. You're doing what you love to do. I had a good bit of freedom when I started it, but here's what I kept coming back to. But is it like it's to a degree, it was life-changing for sure. But I needed to roll the dice at least one time to see if I could really fucking do it. Now, that's a relative statement, but I needed to really give myself a shot at, can I be like a fucking player in this industry? Can I really challenge myself to create really real wealth? And I didn't understand the slow wealth. No one had explained like, hey, Corey, you could, if you started when you're 20 and you put in $300 a month, like you could still be well. Like I didn't know any of that stuff then, right? I'm only thinking big hit, make millions of dollars. Like there just wasn't a lot of resources then too. Like they were starting, but it was like, so my thought process was like, I got to try this. And the worst thing I could do is go back to being a personal trainer. And the worst thing I could do is go back to the coal mine. Mm-hmm. That's literally how I thought about it. But what happens if it fucking explodes? And I remember thinking to myself, I think I can make a $20 million company. That's so fucking makes no sense because I didn't even know anybody that had a $20 million company. I didn't know even what a $20 million company looks like, but I thought I could make a $20 million company.
Something said earlier that I want to get back to this. Something you said earlier that I've been thinking about, want to make sure to bring up again. You said when you met him at the, where you got that, you saw that ad in the magazine for that supplement company, right? Hard Nutrition. You said you put him on the email list. What the fuck are you talking about? Like what email list are you talking about? Like you're a personal trainer. You're trying to get a gig as a fitness model. Like what?
I put him on the list of people. I went through and got every editor of every magazine. That's how I met Jeremy DeLuca from bodybuilding.com. I would email relentlessly, not like an actual like drip email campaign like they got now. I would send out an email with all these motherfuckers on it. Hey, this is me. Here's my updated pictures.
Look at
here's
these apps.
My updated Yeah.
Yeah.
You guys need me in your company. And I remember thinking like, I'm telling Gaspari that. I'm telling fucking BSN that. I'm telling everybody at the Arnold, I'm telling them all like I'm fucking, you need me in your company. And then no one fucking was answering the fucking door. So I just built my own fucking house and like, I fucking went after all of them.
It's like once a month you're sending it or more, you're sending all the time of like updated photos, updated. Yes. Hey, just remember I'm lifting. Here. Remember I'm here. I'm doing Meets. This.
Bodybuilding shows, all of it, dude. I sent so all the crazy. Time.
I think that that's interesting because people don't, you know, people talk about like, oh, grinding or hustling or doing this, or when am I going to get picked up by this or that? But what a lot of people lack is action, right? Like actually doing something about
everyone.
It, right? It's not just putting in the work, but then it's also like letting people know, but I don't want to bother them. I don't want to, but Corey, I don't want to bother them.
Yeah.
I don't want to annoy them.
If no one knows you exist though, you're never going to get found, right? Like it's a, what the fuck are you waiting
for? And you know what else? If they replied to you and said, you need to stop emailing me. This
yeah, summer, perfect.
You know, then you probably only do it 2 or 3 more times.
Yep. So I'll tell you what came from that though. And what changed my perception to everything before, or no, this was before MP. So let me backtrack for a second. So like probably 2005 or six, I'm doing that email list because I'm going to the Arnold, you know, every year and I'm finding all these. Every magazine had a booth that, you know, print magazines, this shit's gone now, but they had a booth and I could see the editor and I would take his information. Anyway, so I email DeLuca, Jeremy DeLuca, who is the co-founder of bodybuilding.com. Bodybuilding.com starting to blow up. And I paid, this is amazing. There's a guy that is doing like senior pictures in Gahanna, which is over by Columbus. I paid him $200 for a photo shoot because I was like, yo, I'm ripped and doing the show. I'm trying to be a fucking fitness model. Like, will you shoot me? He's like, well, I've never done this before, but fuck it, sure. He takes a few pictures. They look pretty good, but I'm using them for my, I put a shirtless picture on my business card every fucking year. I didn't give a fuck, right? I know the house moms love that for personal training, bro. So anyway, I'm out here. And I sending these pictures to my email list, all these people. I do it at 3 a.m. one time because I'm up early or I'm up late, whatever. I was like for real grinding, which I don't even use that word because it's so overused. And I get an email back from Jeremy DeLuca and I recognize the name. And he says, look, Corey, I really like this picture. I'm going to use this. He said, first off, I'll pay you $500 for it. Will you give me the rights to use it in a bodybuilding.com ad? In muscle and fitness, men's health, men's fitness, Maxim, blah, 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 blah. And I almost fell out of my office chair.
You doubled your money.
I doubled my money.
Doubled your money on the exposure. On the
I knew that exposure made me different than every other fucking personal training
for sure.
guy in my city. And then it taught me I can fucking play ball with these guys. I'm way smaller. I'm not as lean. I'm not taking drugs. And motherfucking bodybuilding.com wants to put me in an ad. All fucking gas.
What was that the ad for?
It was just it was literally just an exposure ad. It said like, get ripped, more sex, bodybuilding. Like it's fucking hilarious. I still have it. And this funny thing is, years later, it was laying around like the office of one of the main guys over there. And they didn't even match up that it was, I mean, I was in there doing $30 million with bodybuilding.com at the height of MP. Like I'm in the office pretty often shooting Get Swole, Blueprint, Quad Every Day, all this shit. So I was like kind of a fixture over there for years. And one guy's like, I saw this fucking sitting around. He's like, this is fucking you, isn't it? I go, sure is, man. And that was a huge, huge deal for me. It really put my confidence at another level to think like, I can be this guy that I've always wanted to be. I can be on these magazines. I can do the supplement stuff. And yeah, every spot of the way when I would get just that little bit of like confidence, man, I would then probably like it would be overkill. Like I'd be like, oh fuck yeah, I could go 9 levels more. And those took years and years of time, but that all contributed to it though.
The print magazines is not really a thing anymore. That had an impact on you quite a few ways, right? Didn't that have something to do with getting to know Arnold a little bit also?
Print magazines were my main goal. And I think I know why, because I knew I couldn't be Mr. Olympia. I knew that I couldn't, you know, I just knew I wasn't going to take drugs. So I wasn't going to be able to look like those guys. So I could understand that maybe I could be at some point on a fitness magazine. I'll tell you, CrossFit really helped this, because when CrossFit got popular, early CrossFit, it helped, I think, identify that the 180 to 200 pound guy or 170, 200 pound guy was more attainable in what people wanted to look like. And that's what I looked like.
Yeah. I call it the Blair Morrison effect. You know, he
helped me a ton.
I don't know anybody that didn't want to idolize that body type in the early CrossFit days of that, like lean, 175, 6 foot guy or like 180, yeah. You know, like, you know, and so I just wanted to circle, you know, I think what happened also was the bodybuilding.com situation was, it was a kind of ahead of its time with this like a obtainable goal of like physique, right? Yep. Every other magazine in the world is, or forum in the world is showing these juiced up people that like, kind of like, you know, the outliers, the freaks of the, yeah. of, you know, the human body where, you know, your ad that they were running was actually more like, hey, you could honestly
see this look guy. Like this.
Yep. Yeah. And like, that wasn't necessarily a thought that I think was super common back then, which I think might've been why it was like such a good idea.
Yeah. I never really thought about that. I looked more attainable, Danny.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're getting some magazines, you get a few covers, and then you somehow finagle your way into Arnold Schwarzenegger's office.
Yes.
And he, that, and then, and there's a magazine around, something like that. Yeah. Right. How's so, that's
the magazine thing started. I bothered the fuck out of every one of these editors till one finally.
Common theme for you.
Oh my gosh. The editor of Physical Magazine, which was GNC's main magazine, said yes. But he says yes a month before Thanksgiving. And I'm in gain phase at this point. So I try my best to cut down, whatever. I'm eating like turkey salad at Thanksgiving, doing tons of cardio. Like I had no business probably going to the photo shoot. Messed up a bunch of stuff on the way too. I get there and Greg Plitt, rest in peace, who's one of the best cover guys of all time. He's done like fucking 1,000 covers. He's in front of me and he's killing it. And he got this hot chick with him and he's fucking 190 and shredded. He's a cow, like he's in movies and shit. And I'm next and I look like I still got 7 more weeks to diet. I'm holding water. I got no business being there. So I literally, my first California trip, big shot, shit down my leg. Terrible. And the guy shooting the photo shoot is the main photographer for Muscle Tech. So to say like, cause that was before a lot of the big stuff started happening. So it's like, it was a massive opportunity. He shoots me for 10 minutes. Well, first off, Greg Plitt asked me if I'm on the crew, like the camera crew.
That hurts. That fucking hurts, bro.
Oh man.
So he's done and I'm in a tank top still. And I'm soft, bro, like as a marshmallow. And I'm standing there and he looks at me, he's like, oh. And he didn't even mean no disrespect. He's a nice guy. I was like, no, I'm next. He's like, oh, yeah, yeah. Like, it was bad, dude.
He's like, yo, this the before picture here? Like, is this the before picture?
I was just like soft and like not tight. Anyway, so the guy shoots me for 10 minutes and I look at him and go, look, bro, I see you trying to adjust the lighting. Like, it just ain't here today. I said, how about this? I'll make a deal with you. If you will be willing to shoot me, I will fly myself back out here. Maybe we can send it some magazines. This is not a representation of myself, but when I come back, you'll know like what I'm supposed to be like. He goes, all right, respect, dude. Like he probably thought he'd never hear from me again. So I fucking take his business card. I fucking take my tail between my legs. I come back to Columbus. I spend 6 months on a fucking absolute terror. I'm talking, I'm eating tuna for every meal. I'm sprinting. I'm doing a bunch of shit. I don't even know what I should be doing. I'm doing 1,000 ab wheels. I'm good. I'm trying to make, I literally was thinking like, I'm going to make my abs so fucking ridiculous. People are fucking nervous when they see them. They're fucking uncomfortable. Like I'm going to be that guy. You can put your whole fucking finger in the crack. Like I had all these wild things I made up and that's what happened. I fly back out there. My whole plan, I visualized it in my head. When I take my shirt off, the photographer is going to look at me and go, fuck, that's exactly what happened. I go back up in that bitch like 167, fucking shredded, nasty. And he goes, oh, use red. Like, yeah, okay, I get it now. You know, short story is like, he takes a bunch of pictures, sends them to some magazines. This is like 2006, almost 2007. 2008, it hits a very small magazine called just Physique Magazine. It's quarterly, but it's at Barnes and Noble's. So I had visualized my entire life for some reason, walking in Barnes and Noble's to pick it up. That was the thing that I could visualize. And I got to live that. And it was unbelievable. And then that started an event where people started to know me. And I think at this point it's like 13 or 14 covers, but my biggest one, which was Fitness RX, I have my children on the front of it with me. It was the hardest diet phase I think I've ever had. It was a lot of pressure because the business was doing well. MP, I was on the shooting for the biggest cover. It was at my gym. People were really starting to know me, and I had to really bring my A game. And that cover, I believe, was the determining factor in getting Arnold to be my business partner, because I didn't even have the foresight to think to bring it to the meeting when I was pitching my idol to be my business partner. Thank God one of the investors brought it. He bought it at the airport. It was distributed everywhere and brought it to the meeting and unannounced threw it to Arnold during the pitch. And it changed the entire thing of the whole meeting. He saw me with my family. He saw me at the original old school gym. He went to the whole cover thing. He pulled out the ab poster of me and told me my abs look like Frank Zane's, which was insane. It changed everything in that moment. And I realized that all that diet phase, all of this push, all of this craziness and belief was crescendoing at that exact moment for me to rely on, no, dude, this is me. Like, this is how I operate. And if you trust me with your likeness, I'm a fucking real one. Like, I get it. Like, I almost lived then. I was able to flex. My only knowledge of lifting was 1970s bodybuilding, essentially. Like, so it's like I lived then, because that's all I studied growing up.
Old soul. And then on top of
it, I got to back it up with showcasing it. And that changed, I think it changed my whole career, because forever I stand by Arnold. I'm one of the only people who've got him to do a supplement besides Joe Weider. And he's been a mentor to me this entire time. And so I got to learn from Arnold and Louis Simmons directly. And I think I'm the only person on the planet that can say that, to be honest.
Yeah,
probably. Yeah.
It's far.
Which is pretty wild.
So now fast forward, right? You got max effort muscle, right? Mm-hmm. So when you were starting max effort, you said, all right, there's some things I'm gonna do differently. Like, you know, sure. At one point you're like, if I do another supplement company or when I do, or if I do, I'm definitely gonna do a few things different. Right. Sure. So like, here we are. Like, what lessons you take away? What are you doing different? What did you change? Like, what makes max effort different or special? Or what did you want to do different? What's going on?
Yeah. So to put it in like perspective, the other one was like kind of a retail giant at the time. Right. So all of the things that come and publicly trade and all of these things that come with like big business, like almost 100 employees selling in 100 countries, 60,000 retail doors,
huge athletes,
pressure, huge athletes, Arnold, Tiger, UFC, blah, blah, blah. Like, yeah. Kaepernick, Vic,
Ocho Cavaliers. Like, did y'all sponsor the Cavaliers?
Yeah. All that. Right. So it's like, one, I realized a couple of things about myself. I love business, but I don't know that I was really meant to do business like that, to be honest with you. Like, not that I'm scared of it, or I just don't know that I like it not that personal. Meaning, like,
not your
I don't
vibe.
Like, it's not my vibe. I don't like not knowing all the people that work in the business.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I went to a meeting and didn't even know anybody.
Well, that's a suit and tie. That's a suit and tie business, right?
It is. That's not me. And that's not what I started. Right. So I say, like, max effort, I believe, is the authentic, all the way authentic to Corey and Dustin, the original, you know, to here version of MP, honestly, because I wanted to build it very similar to Beverly International, which I was a fan of back in the day, which is a kind of a subculture brand that's done really well for like 30 years. And so also what I learned about myself was, I was very confident in Corey, but I wasn't really always confident in those big corporate meetings when the muscles and the content seemed to, for some reason, make me feel like, or that person who, quote unquote, hedge fund guy or whatever, like I wasn't like a smart guy. And I allowed that to creep in because of whether it's business acumen or a degree or I don't know, but a lot of times the guy sitting across the table from me had never built anything even fucking close to what I built. Like, they literally couldn't even really hold my jock in business, to be honest. But for some reason, I allowed that to creep in. And I realized that when I did it again, that wasn't going to happen. I'm not saying I'm always the smartest guy, but if I know something's wrong, I'm not going to hold it back. I'm going to speak up. Or when I need to take action and I believe it, I'm just going to take it. And I think like I learned not to just be the dude who's just over here telling people how to get muscles and lose weight or whatever I thought my cat. And now I was really good at that. But I think I took away my, I think I didn't give myself enough credit in the other stuff. So I learned a ton about myself in big business and realized that if this business goes to 100 million or whatever, could I handle it? 1,000,000%. And I would be confident because I've already done it before and I know what to do and what not to do. But the reality was, I just think I wanted to build something more intimate. Very similar to like how you guys have done it forever, because like you guys' brand, I've always said, I've told Danny and Dean both this forever, is my favorite brand I don't own any part of. And it always has been because of the community, because of the way the branding was. It's so fucking cool. And like the vibe around, like I always, like I remember bringing it up in a meeting at Muscle Farm. Like if we go to acquire anybody, we should try to buy Caffeine Kilos. I remember saying that multiple times in meetings. Because I knew you guys had it, and I wanted to be more like you guys, to be honest. And so it was like, when I started Max Effort, I was like, all these people that are on my fitness app to follow my workouts over at Core G Fitness, they need supplements they can trust. The people from MP need supplements they can trust. And I was like, I want to go direct to customer, you know, really dial in with a smaller group at the office and do this thing differently. And so I learned a lot about myself. I learned a lot about how I want to move in life. I'm not a guy that wants to be gone all the time at vendors and traveling. Like, that's not really me. A lot of people don't realize I'm a real fucking gym guy who I think is maybe better than average at business, but it's really just because I've been through so much and I've taken so many risks. I've learned because I fucked up a lot of stuff, but man, like I want to just build quality company that gives good products. And that is as authentic as it can be. And I feel like that's what we have by from the name, from the guys that are in the office, from the things you see in the gym. You know, you can't really rip it off because it's so authentic. So that's kind of
definitely is. Yeah.
That's long winded, but.
And we love, and obviously we love the vibe of the Max Effort, and we see that passion in everything you guys do. You know, it doesn't feel like, you know, like these, you know, supplements is a very tricky business. Contrived. You know, it's very, oh my God, it's just like, who's going to spend the most money to get the most people on TikTok and Instagram pumping their shit? And then It's just like untrustworthy. And just, I just don't get any of those vibes. Like, you know what I'm saying from you guys? I think that's why you guys are successful. And it's still cool, where like a lot of, it's very easy not to be cool in the supplement world. You know, it's more than any, it's very, very easy.
We were cool before. And so that's the thing is like MP had the it factor. It was
they
Nike.
Were, yeah, they were dope. Right?
So, and that's the thing, like, and so I knew, and this brand's evolved, shout out to the graphic gangster, Cole Susak, who does all our stuff. Like, and with one of the business partners, he has evolved the brand to the stuff that you're seeing with the 3D logo, the Max Effort, all the fucking graphics. Like, it is fucking cool. And I know it has the it factor and I know it's authentic. I know what it felt like before and it feels the same, just different. I think very rarely in a business career, maybe do you get a chance to have two brands, you know, got it. And I really believe that this one does. That's why I'm so bullish in its long-term success and possibilities and why I don't have to rush it. That's the other thing I was going to tell you. I've never really forced it to grow. I've just allowed it to do its thing. And, you know, of course, we don't even barely spend on any marketing, like hardly at all. Like I want to do a little bit more of that, but the reality is it's all organic. And I'm proud of that because I think people that fuck with us really fuck with us. And I want to be, you guys will know this, I want to be the band that you only know about if you know about. I feel like that's what Max Effort is. Like you fuck with us. Like Colin Moore said this, Colin Moore's stud at Ohio State Wrestling, is on the USA team, travels all around the world. He said, when I walk on campus and I see somebody that has a Max Effort sweatshirt or t-shirt on, I automatically think they're tougher than everyone else. Yeah, he said, I feel like they get it.
Yep,
and he said, I don't want it to ever be that way. Like, and I'm looking at some other distribution ideas and things, but keeping that is really important to me, that I want people like that really fuck with us to see the other people in the gym and go, oh, okay, they get it.
Sounds like I need a max effort t-shirt to me.
We talk about that a lot. There's this Seth Godin has this book called This Is Marketing, right? And that's like the whole theory basically is don't appease the masses. Don't water yourself down. Like, be authentic. And in fact, like, you should probably go further, right? Like, every single time you find yourself holding back on something that you want to say, that's just more proof that you need to say it, right? And you push to the edges. And if you push to the edges hard, then you'll get a loyal following because they'll be about exactly what you're about. And they will push you to the middle, right? Yeah. So instead of watering yourself down, go further the edge, push harder, and get the most loyal fans possible. And that's what's going to then grow your success and push you to the middle. And you don't have to water yourself down.
Authenticity is the ultimate cheat code. If people would double down on themselves, like, the reason why I fuck with you guys so much is because you guys have always been that way, like 100%. I mean, and that is the key. And I think that's why people have been so long standing following my stuff. Like, they know I'm going to be up training tomorrow. Undoubtedly. They know what they get with me. They're going to get consistent. I always talk about it like this. People might fuck with my stuff and then dip off for a little while and come back. And because I'm not that easy of a chick, right? Like, you got to work when you come over here. Like, that's the thing. Like, I'm not asking people, like, this is your 20-minute work. My motherfucker, I'm asking people to lunge a half mile. I'm asking people to squat all the time. Like, I'm not an easy follow for real, because you got to be really about wanting to change. And that's what's a little interesting. But when you fuck with me, I'm going to change your life. That is undoubted. Like, if you actually say, I'm going to fucking go all in with this guy, I'm going to develop myself, I'm going to take the supplements, I'm going to do the training, like, I'm really going to fucking listen. Not like on the peripheral, like, kind of like, I'm really going to fuck with Corey. I get some crazy results, and I always have. But once again, it's not an easy one, because I'm not saying there's some fucking hack over here. Now, there is some hacks I've figured out, but the reality is I realize that about myself. That's why I can be all the way authentic. That's why I can be deep like that, because I'm definitely not for fucking everybody, but I ain't trying to be for everybody. Mm-hmm. Yep. But that fire,
that's really what it is right there.
That you see online with me, though, that shit's real, bro. I'm not playing that up. Like, I just made 315 on bench. I ain't benched that since 2018 when I fucking ripped my rotator cuff off. Like, that emotion you see is because I done worked for that. And so if that motivates you, and then you say, well, fuck, like, I know this dude's going to be there tomorrow doing the same. Like, that's really what this has been built on. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? So it is as real as it gets all the way, good, bad, or indifferent. So
we're kind of running a little out of time here, but one thing I do want to get to, I know for Dylan, is, so I've been, I've been doing the lunges and the pushups and everything.
Oh yeah.
Again, my second streak. Anyway, Dylan, he's doing lunges.
I got the app here. I got the core.
Dude, I'm
app.
On. I'm doing anabolic fasting. My wife and I.
There it is.
Anyway, Dylan's doing the anabolic fasting also. But he's like, he's got a few questions. I said, dude, you just got to ask Corey in person.
No, I think I switched it up yesterday, because originally I was super hungry, because I usually work out between the two meals, closer to before the second meal. And I was just so fucking hungry all the time. And then my workouts would be kind of shitty. Mm-hmm. But yesterday I ate a massive lunch. Like, my first meal was huge.
That's the difference.
I had sweet potato, mushrooms, green beans, and then some meat. But I just completely filled the fucking plate till it was like overflowing. And I had to actually force the second meal, because I wasn't even hungry by the time the second meal happened. So I just wasn't eating enough. And then I think today I had the opportunity to work out during the fast portion, which usually I do it in between meals. And that was a big difference also.
I think the key to any type of fasting program is you can't eat a 6-meal-a-day bodybuilding portion size and do a fasting program. So my fasting program was based off of another guy I learned from in person and on the internet, but was in touch with for years, is Mario Di Pasquale, who wrote the original anabolic diet. He was a mentor to Dr. Serrano, who's a local guy, who's my formulator, and I learned from, who's ultra fucking smart too. And when I read Dr. Pasquale's book and then interacted with him and asked him a bunch of questions, I just realized there were some holes for me. And then over time, a lot of people asked about intermittent fasting all the time. I didn't really have an answer. So I just said, fuck it, I'm going to try it. And when I tried it, and this is like 2014, I started messing with this. When I tried it, I kind of ate like I was eating on that other diet. And then I mixed and matched a bunch of stuff for lifestyle. And there comes anabolic fasting. And a lot of people come to the app to learn that. And then I end up teaching them a bunch of other stuff on top of it, right? The workouts, the podcast, the books and all that stuff. But anabolic fasting really changed a lot about how I do things. But the reality is most people make two mistakes. They don't eat their fats. I don't know why. And they don't eat enough. And it's mostly because I don't know if they think they're going to eat fat, they're going to get fat, or two, they just think they, when they're, because they're on a diet, they have to eat a small portion. So you have to eat, you lunge enough, your metabolism will be plenty fast enough to chew through all that. And that it's not keto. If you just eat all the vegetables I tell you to eat, it's over 100 carbs. Yeah. So, or right at. So the reality is it's a borderline keto-ish diet that, you know, reality is you hardly have any cravings. Once you do it right, to your point, you had to force down the second meal, you figure out the lifestyle. And I wanted to find a way that it started with me, could be more normal. Now that sounds funny because I'm very abnormal and crazy, but I was trying to find a balance as being a dad of three kids that on Friday nights, I could go eat what I wanted. On Saturday nights, I could go and I could be dad and eat ice cream and be out and still be able to do the things I want to do. And with those old bodybuilding diets, I really couldn't get away with that. So that's kind of where all that came from. It was out of necessity, really, for my own change.
I want to go on a date with my wife on Friday night, eat whatever the fuck I want and have some cocktails. And I also want to take my shirt off whenever the fuck I want.
There it is.
Is that it? Like, that's the selling point right there.
That's it, dude. Like that's...
And yeah, I love drinking pints of Guinness and fucking smoke cigars and being a degenerate on the weekends. Like I want to fucking be a dude. You know what I mean? Like that's what Arnold said to me one time when I was at his house. Like it's okay to have a little dysfunction with all the discipline.
Yeah. So I actually ate very similar to this by chance, by accident, like 5 or 6 years ago. Was like the only time I was like shredded is there I was doing CrossFit 3 times a day, but eating very similar to this just because of how my schedule was. It was bad. But the problem was, I was going to bring up, I lost a lot of muscle also because of the fucking cardio. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It's like back to not eating enough meat, not eating enough fats, right? Like that's
right. So yeah, this time I'm pumped because I'm not killing myself. And
and the amino recovery is a big key to that, right? So you have a non-calorie, quality product.
I got 2 scoops in a gallon jug. I heard that's the way to do it.
It is.
Oh, dude, I was doing the Corey G fucking gallon a day with the lemon. Remember that?
Yeah. I remember you used to grab it at the Arnold all the time.
Remember that? Yeah. That was my thing, dude. I would always, I'd get it online, but then I would buy it obviously in person at the Arnold.
Yeah.
Dude, I love that, man. I've just been slacking on. I don't take any branch.
I got two scoops of Glacier Freeze.
I need to get some more, man. I love drinking that. That lemon is so good. You guys figured
lemonade
that
is out, killer, bro.
You fucking figured it out. Lemonade shit does not taste good normally, but your guys' does. I don't know why. It's just
that was the first one I ever made too.
I know you figured it out.
First flavor, crushed it. And here's the thing about that: there's all these like, there's one study that BCAAs don't do this and that, whatever. Listen, I've been taking branching aminos 10 to 20 grams a day almost my entire career, and I would say out of all the volume, all the competing, like I've been competing every quarter since about 1998, and something literally, and like my recovery and. And I'm not a high-level athlete. That's what I try to remind people. Like, I didn't get recruited to play anything. I averaged, like, 4 points a game in basketball. Like, I didn't even play the other sports through. Like, I wasn't that fast. I could jump, kind of. But the reality was, like, I'm not a D-anything athlete. I am a person who gives out extraordinary effort on a period of time, very consistent. But my recovery has been based around me understanding nutrition and supplementation and no drugs for over 20 years of competition. That's it. And branch chains are one of the things I've never not taken. And when I don't take them, I feel fucking terrible. And these formulas were based around our own application. That's the key. Like if I'm asking you to do it, metaphorically you, I'm fucking doing it too. And so like we can be one the same, customer owner, like that's how it is here. And I think that has a lot to do with same as you guys. You're on the platform just like your people drinking the coffee. It's no different. And that's why I think there's always been like that association with these brands or myself personally and your guys' brand, because the live it part of it is such a huge part that hadn't been for a lot of people. You know what I mean? So
Where can people find you and where can they get your new book that you just spoke about earlier?
Yeah. The audio book I think is the move, and you can get it at Audible or over at, on iTunes, How to Build Confidence and Win at Life. I'm really proud of the audio book because one is uncomfortable reading. When's the last time you read the hardest shit to talk about in front of all your friends? That's pretty uncommon, right? So I didn't anticipate that, but reading it back was difficult. It was a very good like growth experience for me and for my mom, actually. Having the guys from my podcast or our podcast called the Roundtable Podcast, like on the Lunge and Learn Network, shameless plug. They got to then weigh in after each chapter, just like Goggins did. Made the experience way different because they know me. They've been around me. They consume the content as younger people and been working with me for years. And they were able to drag things out of me that I didn't think about when I was writing this book. And so that was a really cool experience. So every chapter has a mini podcast in between it.
That's sick.
So the audio book for your Lunge and Learn, I think is the move. Everything, social media is at Corey G Fitness, CORYG Fitness. Not really because I loved fitness, but that was like the only thing that was available when I made the move from Muscle Farm Prez. So at Corey G Fitness on everything, and then maxeffortmuscle.com for supplements.
Amazing.
Hell yeah.
Follow him up.
Hey, I appreciate you guys. I wish I could be as swaggy as Dean. I just
we're all trying.
Throw out of this dirty neck beard. And not shave. Danny texted me this morning about the pie. I'm like, oh, dude, I look like dog shit. But I'm like, already was Trolled working. It. I was already working downstairs in the office. I'm like, I gotta get out of the house. Oh well.
Yeah, dude. Well, that's the key. That's the key to looking cool, right? Is just look like you don't give a shit what anybody thinks.
But deep down, you're like insecure about it.
Yeah.
I might be the key though, because I never match, and my wife always brings it up, and I said, why? I just think that's like kind of a made up thing.
Yeah. Look at Adam Sandler. Sickest
guy ever. Any celebrity artist, they never match.
The more you look like you don't give a shit what anybody thinks, the cooler you look.
Yeah. It's a vibe. Yeah. It's a vibe.
Facts.
It's a vibe.
All right, Corey. Hey, go talk numbers with that nerd who's in there.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I appreciate you guys.
We appreciate you, buddy. Sure. Thank you. Talk to you soon.
See you, Corey.
Later.
Yeah. Boom.
There it is.
Sweet. That was great.
Yeah. That was great.
Oh, he's a great guest. Just go.
I like how he just hangs the headphones and leaves. That's sick.
Yeah. It's like a mic drop.
That's so dope.
Looks good.
This episode is also sponsored by Rebecco.ca. Go to Rebecco.ca. They have condiments. They have jams. They have sprays and butters and oils. All guilt-free, by the way. That means if you're on a diet, or you want to stay trim, you want to keep the bricks, you want to keep the abs, you want to look swole, you don't want to be inflamed by sugar and processed shit, check them out, man. I rock that barbecue sauce daily, son. Daily. That Rebecco barbecue sauce. It is incredible. And check them out, man. Rebecco. Zero shoes, baby. Zero shoes have saved my back, my knees, my butt, and my crack. Try these shoes out, man. They're $80. I think they have regular sales where they're 40% off also. So we didn't ask them for a discount code. We said, you know what? These shoes are cheap enough, right? They have sandals. They have boots. They have shoes. They have sneakers. They have running shoes. They have everything you need, like literally need. We don't need these arches and these heel lifts and these toe lifts. And if you listen to our episode with Steven Sashin, he will explain why those are killing you. Zero shoes, man. All three of us wear them daily. Mine stink so bad because I do my daily lunges in them. I work out in them. I walk in them. I go to the store in them. It's all I do is wear those shoes. I have 7 pairs of shoes. I don't touch any other ones unless they're lifters. So, I don't know. It's pretty much a no-brainer, but Zero Shoes, that's XERO.com. ZeroShoes.com. I might have said that wrong. I think it's XERO Shoes.com. Zero as in the Roman numeral X plus the ERO. It's very scientific. I don't want to get into it right now. ZeroShoes.com. Be there.